Hi, this is Tracy Swedlow, Editor-in-Chief of Interactive TV Today, and this is Radio ITVT. I am very excited to welcome to the show Sherry Brennan, who is the SVP of Distribution at Fox. And Sherry is a longtime contributor to this industry and has recently just won one of our very rare Lifetime Achievement Awards, ITVT Star. And welcome to the show, Sherry.
Thank you. It's fun to be here. And thanks for the award. That was the highlight of my year.
Oh, good. Thanks. I was thrilled to see that you won it because you come to every show, you lead, you are out there being quoted. People love you. You got a big applause. I mean, there's a lot of respect for you out there in the industry. And I think it's well deserved.
Thank you. Thank you. That's nice to hear.
And I know working in a kind of a boys club, you know, in the broadcasting business, it's a lot of hard work to shine. And, you know, all power to you.
Thanks. I think it's, I think women have some inherent advantages in that, actually. So I don't find it too difficult to be heard, as I've heard some women do. But for me, I think having grown up in the 70s and being told my entire life since about age 4 that I could do anything I wanted to if I worked hard enough and put my mind to it, I really just believe that. And I don't have any problems speaking up. And in general, I don't think people find it difficult to listen. And so, yeah, I haven't had too much of the issues that other women complain about, not being heard or not being allowed to speak, et cetera. That doesn't seem to have been something that has dogged me too much in my career.
Well, I think it has something to do with your talent, your intelligence. I mean, I'm all sort of in favor of saying nice things about you because you obviously deserve it. But I mean, it's difficult. I know I experienced myself in previous companies where I was achieving, I was winning awards, but it was very hard to, you know, to move up in a corporate environment. Maybe it's because I was younger, but I had to literally start my own company, which I did, to see that kind of rise in success. So I'm very, very happy for you that you haven't had to deal with that.
Yeah, I think, you know, you also, there's another point there, which is you kind of, you can kind of choose to ignore things that you don't like in life. And I think I do that. I think when faced with people who don't want to listen to me of either gender, I probably just tend to ignore them and just barrel mm-hmm. through. So right. I don't know if that's good or bad, but
good technique. And, no, you know, I like
look,
that.
There is obviously there's gender bias that I'm pretty aware of, and I think that has affected me. I don't mean to say it's never affected me at all, but I think, you know, I'm just so sort of I tend to take the bull by the horns, and generally, if I feel that, I will say something about that. And I think it's mostly gone over pretty well when I felt that to have said, you know, I have something to say here. You have to listen. Sometimes I raise my hand, even like when people are talking all around me, like I'm in school, I'll raise my hand and say, I have something to say if everyone would stop and listen.
Well, let's hear what you have to say about your place in the industry, because even though you won an ITV All-Star, Interactive TV All-Star Award, which is a lifetime achievement, you, as you said, your life isn't over. There's still more to do. So let's talk a little bit about what you are doing now, what your mandate is. With the title of SVP of Distribution, are you in charge of deciding all, you know, which services, which platforms, which OTT offerings to distribute Fox content on? Is that the main?
Yeah, so Fox obviously has a really large network portfolio, everything from broadcast stations to national and regional sports networks to national cable networks. We also have a suite of global networks. So we have a very, very large portfolio of networks, and I represent all of those networks in any deals that I do for the company. The distribution group has a pretty, you know, lean staff, but we do have 4 or 5 people who have similar mandates to mine. The thing that differentiates my role is that I tend to focus on the new entrants to the space. So people who come along and want to stand up a video service using the internet as their distribution platform will come through my door first. And I have a team that I work with to vet them from a couple perspectives. One is the sort of technical readiness, which, you know, it's what I find is kind of interesting. People think that it's very easy to stand up a video service and run it online, and they can't understand why nobody has built a better mousetrap, and they think that they have. But a lot of times they come in my door, and when I start explaining to them some of the complexities of distributing content that has geographic territory boundaries and things like that that they haven't really considered, they quickly realize that it's a pretty complicated process. So I like to say our business is more complex than it looks when you're sitting in front of the TV watching. You know, it's quite complicated. So I focus a lot on helping potential new entrants understand our business. I do a lot of educational kind of meetings with people explaining the complexities of 210 broadcast stations across the country, all of our different regional sports networks that hit about 70% of the country, but have to be delivered zip code by zip code. You know, I spend a lot of time explaining that to people, and we evaluate whether the systems they've built can actually deliver content the way that we need it to be delivered. And then I also get involved in obviously negotiating the deals with the people who pass muster. And, you know, those deals can take anywhere from 6 months to 3 years. So they can be quite long. And then once we have a deal in place, I have people in my group who help get them up and running. There tends to be 6 to 12 months of, honestly, hand-holding to help them understand, again, all these complexities in terms of delivering the right content to the right person at the right time and place. So it's a pretty complicated business these days, much more so than when I got into it in 1989.
What do you expect people to know when they walk in the door? I mean, what, you know, what would be a good partner right off the bat for a new platform?
Well, I love it when people come in and they have done their homework and they understand what content we represent and they know something about the business and they understand how difficult it is to get subscribers to pay them every month for a service. So I've had, you know, people who understand really literally nothing about that, and they'll come in and tell me that they're going to have 10 million subscribers in the first year. And, you know, those are kind of laughable conversations, because nobody with the deepest pockets or the most sophisticated technology, nobody has hit that kind of a number. So when somebody comes in and says, I'm going to hit 500,000 in my first year, I think to myself, okay, this person understands our business. They know how difficult it is. They understand how hard it is to get people to part with their hard-earned cash. And, you know, now I've got somebody in my office who at least out of the starting gate is realistic. And that goes a long way with me.
So which platforms are new that you're excited about? You know, the ones that you think have something going for them.
Well, we have deals with almost all of the currently launched virtual MVPD platforms. So the only one we are not part of is Philo, who I actually like a lot and have worked with them for years on the other side of their business, which is helping universities convert their pay TV subscriptions from a wired TV-based distribution to a device-based distribution. I have thought that was a great idea from the first minute I heard about it, but we are not part of their virtual MVPD service, mainly because of the retail price that they wanted to achieve, which just didn't leave them enough room to license our content portfolio. We're part of all the others. I think, you know, Hulu, obviously, we own a big piece of today, and we've been very involved in the service from its inception about 10 or 11 years ago. And so we are really excited about that. I think they have one of the most unusual user interfaces. It's very beautiful and very visual and video-centric. So I like it. It's a bit hard to get used to. So for people just coming into this space, they will either love it or hate it. And if they hate it, then they probably will not stick around as subscribers. obviously like YouTube TV a lot as well. They have a lot of experience with video delivery, and their UI is pretty intuitive. And for people who use YouTube, you know, the free YouTube service online, it's really intuitive for them. And I think they're accustomed to how the recommendations work and how to find content. So I think that one has also has a rosy future. Sony was one of the first, PlayStation Vue, one of the first ones out of the gate. And I think they have a really great opportunity to market to their gamer population, which they're sort of doing a better job at now than they had in the past, I think. And their service, again, looks really beautiful. I mean, all of them actually look beautiful. We're also part of Fubo, of course, which is another new one. And they have, again, a very slick user interface. They started off being sports-centric, and I think that shows in how they display content to users. And then there is Sling, which was, again, one of the earlier ones. You know, they're not really delivering a lot of broadcast station content. So that one kind of is a head scratcher for me from a user perspective. I think people really care about broadcast, and so I'm not sure why they've made that choice. And then there's DirecTV Now, which again is very easy to use for a pay TV subscriber. It's going to look really, really familiar. So I think those, you know, the commonality there is all of those companies have relatively deep pockets. They've all got a lot of experience delivering video, and they all have a lot of experience getting customers to come to their sites or apps or service platforms and watch video. So I think that serves them all really, really well. There are lots of potential new entrants who I talk to, but most of them don't have that kind of experience with either delivering video or gaining customers. And I think that makes for a very sort of hard row to hoe, to use my farmer background to describe that. It's difficult, I think, for them to compete with some of these services that are already in the market.
And what about Facebook Watch or Vudu?
So those are interesting platforms too. I think Facebook Watch, you know, they're not really looking to license linear network content, and you know, they're trying to do something kind of different than the business that we are currently in. I think that is an opportunity for people like us to play with new viewing models and potentially new ad-supported business models for short-form content. I haven't seen that get a lot of traction yet with users, so I'm not sure people who go to Facebook are really thinking of Facebook as a place to go watch video. I know from groups I belong to on Facebook that videos related to the group topic get a lot of viewing really fast, and so that's kind of interesting, but those are more organic, and I think, you know, consumers are getting really savvy, and they don't like to be sort of fooled into watching content that seems authentic, but then it turns out it's really there for a commercial purpose. So I don't know what I think about that. I think it's tough. It's a tough nut to crack.
Well, since you won the ITV All-Star Award as an interactive TV, and there's not a lot of interactive TV around these days, but, you know, we're all kind of interested in that. I'm kind of curious, you know, what you think about if any of the content that you're managing and any of the platforms you're working with, are they discussing interactive TV? I mean, Netflix just announced they're going to be doing some interactive TV with Charlie Brooker's Black Mirror, and Walmart's Vudu platform is going to start delivering interactive TV with a company in New York called Echo. I know I'm throwing you kind of, maybe it's a little bit of a curveball, but since we're so interactive TV oriented, I thought I'd ask. In case it's happening.
I think, there are lots of different companies that have sprung up over the last 10 years or so, probably even longer, to try to engage consumers in an experience beyond just sitting back and watching TV. And I have been excited about a lot of them over the years. I was very excited about one whose name escapes me at the moment, but they built something for Game of Thrones that let you sort of dive in and look at maps of the territories where the show was taking place and read biographies of the characters.
I think they won an Emmy for that, possibly.
Yeah,
they nominated a few years ago.
Yeah, that's, I think we're remembering the same one. And I was thinking of that at the time as what a great benefit for subscribers of a pay TV service, and what a great way to encourage people to use the legitimate version of a piece of content versus a pirated version. So I was trying to figure out if there was a way to make that a benefit of subscription, and if you watched Game of Thrones in a pirated way, you wouldn't be able to access all that stuff because you wouldn't have the right login. So I was kind of thinking of it as that at one point. I thought it might be a great way to get more people interested in the content, but it kind of, I think, turns out to be the other way around, that when people are really interested in the content, then they seek out these more interactive experiences. And so I don't think we've yet developed the sort of killer synergy that brings people into the content. It seems to me that it's all about harvesting people who are already interested in the content. So, sports is a great example where people are already watching the game. They're not coming to watch the game so that they can look at stats. But while they are watching the game, they might enjoy looking at stats. And if that keeps them on the channel during ad breaks or something like that, then that's great for us, of course. But you don't see people coming for the interactive experience so much as appreciating it once they get there.
I
But
think
like I said, go
I'm sorry,
ahead.
go ahead. Well, I was thinking at minimum, accessing extras like we used to do on DVDs, I think is an obvious sort of interactive way to dig deeper into the content. A competitor, Turner, of course, with their FilmStruck app for classic films, they offer all kinds of additional extras devoted to a particular film. I really wish these OTT services would wrap themselves around just delivering extras and metadata and things like you're saying. Delivering real integrated organic interactive TV is a major challenge. So I agree though, something like a Game of Thrones approach for all of
Yeah, I
these.
think I've seen YouTube TV just launch something related to sports that's kind of interesting, where you can go in and look at stats and look at key plays and things like that while you're watching the game. So again, I think that can keep people in, and it can please people. It can make people feel like they're getting a better value for their money. But I don't think it's going to bring people into the subscription in the first place. So I believe that's why there hasn't been a whole lot of investment in it, because it's sort of the icing on the cake, and people are still trying to figure out the cake.
So let's go back to you for a second, because you mentioned your farm background, and I was curious what that was, but also how does someone with a farm background do so much in the TV business in, the city of LA, where there are no more farms anymore? I mean, what do you think is your leadership style at Fox, and how does that play out when you have so many, news stories and trends impacting our industry? How does your leadership help surf all of those, pebbles in the stream, to use a farm metaphor, maybe? I don't know.
Well, I should clarify, I did not grow up on
Rocks
a
in the
farm.
field? Rocks in the field? Okay. All right.
I didn't
Okay.
grow up on a farm. I did grow up in Iowa, however, where I was surrounded by lots of farms,
A lot of
and I
farms. I have
spent
driven
time
through
on farms.
Iowa. Yeah.
Yeah, it's still one of my favorite places. And when I go back and I see the rolling fields, I feel very nostalgic. And I've developed this notion that whatever geography you grew up in is going to be the geography in your life that makes you feel the safest and most comfortable. I guess that's
Interesting.
assuming you had a relatively happy childhood.
I grew up in Columbus, Ohio. Very nice town.
So
Yes.
there you go. But I think that growing up in the Midwest and growing up in the 70s, I sort of absorbed naturally a couple things. One, growing up in Iowa, and maybe a lot of Midwesterners share this, is just a very straightforward attitude. It's a very matter-of-fact attitude. It's not a histrionic or emotional or even, artsy or dramatic kind of a place to grow up, or at least it wasn't when I was a kid. My dad was a washing machine repairman, and my mom was a stay-at-home mom for a while, and eventually did things like taught kids how to swim and stuff like that. So you know, everybody was just hardworking and very straightforward and sort of earnest in a way. And I think that comes through in my leadership style today. I have a genuine curiosity about how things work and about what people want to do and what interests people and what engages people's attention and time. And so my curiosity combined with a sort of straightforward ability to react to things, I think, has been valuable and has helped helped my career a lot. So I do think growing up in the Midwest and having that sort of more agrarian community around me gave me a sort of a grounding that makes people feel, I suppose, sort of safe or comfortable, which is helpful.
I think that's well articulated, a kind of gravitas, you know. So what new story or trend or something that emerged this year has been challenging, but you have found that you've been able to navigate it or is impacting your job or your business in a really, really intense way? I mean, it sounds like a job interview question, but, you know, like...
Do you have a job for me, Tracy? Because I maybe need one.
Yeah. No. They're going to keep you. Or if they don't, I'll get on their case. She's amazing out there. Everybody, Sherry Wren is the greatest. Okay, so tell me about something that's impacting the business right now.
Well, one of the things I've been talking about a lot lately, it's not exactly new, but it was a little bit of a revelation to me when I saw it mapped out on paper, is just the huge proliferation of screens. So this is something that everybody nods their head at when I say it and they know it, but what I didn't realize is even in the last like 5 or 6 years, the number of smartphones in people's possession in the U.S. has doubled. And that just shocked me when I looked at that number, because it felt to me, you know, 6 years ago, say, that everybody I knew had a smartphone. Now, actually, everyone does. Now, you know, back then there were only maybe 100 million or 150 million in the country. Now there's about 300 million. So there's literally almost one smartphone for every human being in the country. And that alone is huge. But then when you add on top of that, all of the internet connected set-top box type devices, the Rokus, the Apple TVs, the Chromecasts, the Fire Sticks, all of those devices that make our TVs able to connect to the internet, the exposure to online video and the ability to access it has just dramatically increased even in the last 5 years. And I think that is literally changing everything. It is putting pressure on the pay TV subscriber numbers. We're seeing, you know, that number being pretty flat, which is arguably good news. I mean, we say flat is the new up, you know, and that's not really a joke. The number of non-pay households is growing, but, you know, good news, silver lining, most of them have broadband. So I think that creates a huge opportunity. I have not really seen anybody figure out how to take advantage of that opportunity and monetize that opportunity to the same degree that the pay TV ecosystem has been monetized. And that's obviously a problem. So that's probably the biggest challenge that we're facing right now as a pay TV industry.
Which platform that you're delivering to is doing better than you expected?
Oh, gosh. I think the virtual MVPDs as a category, are doing better than I had anticipated. The growth has really been phenomenal. We'll see how that settles out, because I know that there's still quite a bit of churn there. And I think that many people have more than one pay TV service right now. We know maybe 40% of virtual MVPD subscribers still have a traditional pay TV service. And I would not expect that to remain the same forever. So it'll be interesting to see how that all shakes out. But as a category, that has really grown faster than I thought. And then on the other side, free ad-supported streaming sites have also gotten, you know, quite a bit of traction, even with content that is obviously not current season, not the premier content. They still are generating a lot of views. And so that's another market that has grown a little bit faster than I would have expected from my seat, where I tend to focus on premium video content. And, you know, there's a lot of good enough, sort of suboptimal, but good enough content out there, whether it's older or less production values or whatever, that's free. and that's sucking a lot of time from people away from pay TV.
Can you say how Fox Now is doing?
Well, Fox Now is our new aggregated app through which viewers can access all the Fox content, and it's doing great. I mean, it gives people sort of one-stop shopping for everything Fox, and that we know that consumers prefer to go to aggregators versus silos, and so you know, that was sort of the impetus behind launching that. That said, pay TV providers and Hulu still generate a lot more viewing than our own sites and apps. And I think that's true across the industry.
And you, well, just before you were talking about, you know, free sites that deliver or ad supported content. And I mean, just YouTube alone, I know I turn to YouTube a lot. And I mean, but I watch every single category, and I look at all of the different platforms and have all of the different connections to the MVPDs. So, but I would say that YouTube is definitely a big competitor, you know, for my attention. Do people at Fox feel that YouTube is a big competitor, or sort of lower on the list compared to the different MVPDs you're working with?
Oh, I think for sure it is a big competitor in terms of the race to gain people's time and attention. They certainly are a growing video platform. So yeah, we see it that way. We all also take advantage of that growth, obviously, in terms of putting content there to market our premium TV shows and things like that. So it's both a competitor, but it's also an opportunity for us to sort of fish where the fish are.
Well, I, you know, like you said earlier also about YouTube exploring some new ways to generate revenue and to provide interactive content. To what extent are you guys looking at other opportunities like commerce, you know, ways to generate more revenue, or perhaps brand extensions? I don't know if you're really dealing with those kinds of issues in your job, but since you're negotiating the deals, maybe that's sort of part of the future thinking, you know, the tomorrow thinking, to use our brand. But, you know, and how your relationships with the new platform providers will go forward with Fox. Is that true or
sure.
not true?
Yeah, look, we've always had a, you know, merchandise division here, and many larger media companies do. That's not typically part of our licensing negotiations for linear content or on-demand content. Not saying it couldn't be in the future, but that hasn't really been an aspect to date. We have a pretty thriving EST business as well for TV, for both current season and prior season television content. Excuse me. So there's that aspect as well. And some of our pay TV providers are starting to stand up EST stores, which I think is interesting. And I've always thought that it would be kind of cool to link that with the linear or on-demand exhibition of a show. So if somebody's watching on demand, you could see, you know, that a link to buying the prior season on EST or even a DVD of it might be interesting. That's never, you know, really come to fruition, but I've always thought that would be kind of an interesting add-on. I don't know if it hasn't come to fruition because the powers that be realize it's not going to make very much money, it's not worth it, or if it's just not, you know, something anybody's really put any time into analyzing. I'm really not sure about that. You know, there's also always format enhancements. So we started off with standard definition video and then went to high definition. 4K came along for a while. 3D came along for a while. That's kind of fallen by the wayside because it takes so much bandwidth to transmit, I think. Mm-hmm. And then 4K is the new thing now. And we're getting quite a lot of traction in on sports with 4K, which is pretty cool. And once you watch an event, a sporting event in 4K, even high def just doesn't look as good. It's really quite remarkable. So that's an enhancement that we're, you know, spending a lot of time and money investing in these days. And who knows, you know, what comes next. There seems to always be some new format that comes along that makes it even better. So those are some things that we're exploring now. I think just keeping up with technological developments takes a lot of time and attention, but obviously absolutely necessary to stay in the game. It's sort of table stakes.
What would you like to see happen since you're a visionary, since you've been here for so long? And how many years have you been in the industry? You know, what's the long view? What's the trajectory? What's next? But first, how long have you been working in this
I've been
field?
in the industry for 30 years, so I often give
You're not that old.
presentations.
You're not that old. Come on.
I'm 55, just for the record, but I've been in the industry for 30 years, so it has been, a great career, and so much has changed in that 30-year span. It's really quite remarkable. And I give a lot of presentations these days to rooms full of people who, weren't even born yet when I started in the industry. So I like to tell them, imagine everything you've learned in your life from 0 to age 25 or whatever. And I've learned that much just about TV because it's changed that much in the last 30 years. So it's really been amazing. I don't consider myself really a visionary per se. I think I have a good perspective on what will or won't work. And I see a lot of ideas just from where I sit. People come and pitch me their ideas about video related products and services. I think gamification and sort of the immersive experiences you can have with virtual reality will be a burgeoning industry in the next few years. I don't think it will take the place of pay TV. I think it's a different business and a different experience, but I do think that it will be related and use many of the same characters or storylines or themes that we see on TV. And I think that will be really, really fun. That's one thing I kind of wish I was part of that I'm really not here at Fox, but I think it's really, really intriguing. But I think there's something there. I don't think we've figured out exactly what it is yet.
You know, it's so weird as I started out in this industry in VR in the early 90s.
Oh, wow.
So if you ever want to talk about the
Well,
old days and the community and all the sort of hyperbola up and down, movement. Anyway, that's a long story. So I think that's it for me. But if there's anything else you'd like to say to the listening community about what they should do, or what you hope will drive the industry. What's your dearest wish for the next, I don't know, year ahead, 5 years
a
ahead?
lot of times actually at TV of Tomorrow, I meet so many smart people, which is one of the reasons I love the show, because I
Woo-hoo.
get to meet lots of people there who are coming into the industry, coming at it from all different perspectives and have lots of different ideas. And what I have been trying to convince people of the last few years is to take all their brain power and all their enthusiasm and all their creativity and really focus it around a couple things, around a better ad experience for viewers, because carpet bombing people with 30-second spots is just not acceptable in 2018, and it won't be in the future either. But it's also not acceptable to lose that revenue stream, right? So there's a lot of smart people out there, and I hope that they will continue pushing on how to create a better and equally lucrative advertising experience. So that's one thing. And then secondly, same sort of idea. Take all of your creativity and enthusiasm and engineering expertise and figure out that killer app that will make it easy for people to figure out what they want to watch and find it and make it play.
Okay, well, with that final statement, we really appreciate your sharing your experience, your wisdom, your farmer leadership skills, or at least living in around the farm in
I call it
Iowa,
agrarian.
Iowan,
How about that?
I Iowan, I think,
Iowan,
and
yes.
Iowan experience. So thanks very much, Sherry. And of course, you will be at the next TV of Tomorrow, which is December 6th in New York City.
I will be there. I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait to hear what I'm going to talk about.
Oh, we'll tell you, but you'll be able to control it. Don't worry. Thank you so much, everybody. Check out our lineup of speakers, actually, which has been revealed sort of quietly at the TV of Tomorrow show.com/speakers, and there will be more to be announced. Sherry, always a pleasure.
Nice to
Thank you
talk to
so
you,
much.
Tracy. Thanks for having me as a guest.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.